Hey friends, we've got an incredible event coming your way on May 7th through 9th. We're so excited to co-host the Responsive Nonprofit Summit alongside our friends and partners in growing generosity, Virtuous.
This free virtual event is an opportunity to dig deeper into the challenges you're facing and discover how responsive fundraising can unlock a world of possibility.
You can join Becky and me on the conversation stage to hear good humans talk about how they're tackling the retention crisis, they're managing change, building donor journeys that grow engagement, and being whole leaders in this work. You really don't want to miss this.
Register today at weareforgood.com/RNS. We'll see you there, friends.
Hey friend, let me ask you something. Why do some social impact brands thrive while so many others fail to get traction, build support for their cause, and make meaningful progress toward their mission?
Our friend Eric Ressler over at Cosmic explores this question in his new brilliant podcast, Designing Tomorrow. Each episode is a deep dive into the strategies, mindsets, and behaviors that top social impact brands use to play and win in the attention economy.
It's not just a podcast, it's this modern playbook for navigating our rapidly changing, digitally driven world that you can use to reach your true impact potential. And new episodes are dropping every Tuesday.
Follow and subscribe to Designing Tomorrow on your favorite podcast platform or catch the video versions on YouTube. We've dropped the links in this episode's description. We'll be listening right alongside you. Support for this show is brought to you by our friends at Bloomerang. Bloomerang offers donor management and online fundraising software that helps small to medium nonprofits, like First Tee of Greater Akron, a nonprofit empowering kids and teens through the game of golf.
After just 1 year with Bloomerang, they doubled their unique donors, improved donor stewardship, and raised more funds. To listen to the full interview of First Tee of Greater Akron, visit bloomerang.com/weareforgood or click the link in our show notes. Hey, I'm John.
And I'm Becky.
And this is the We Are For Good podcast.
Nonprofits are faced with more challenges to accomplish their missions and the growing pressure to do more, raise more, and be more for the causes that improve our world.
We're here to learn with you from some of the best in the industry, bringing the most innovative ideas, inspirational stories, all to create an impact uprising.
So welcome to the good community. We're nonprofit professionals, philanthropists, world changers, and rabid fans who are striving to bring a little more goodness into the world.
So let's get started. Becky, are you not just so thrilled right now?
I'm grinning from ear to ear, and I just want to say something to everybody before we get into this intro. If you are someone who is struggling a little bit right now, whether that's personally or professionally, or you're just going through a tough time, I want to tell you you're in the right place today, because the human that we have brought on to the podcast today is one of the most life-giving, life-affirming humans that we have met in the We Are For Good community. And she is going to come in here and wrap her virtual mom arms around you and give you the biggest hug and the push out the door that you need. Because today we're talking with Sonia Perez Lauterbach, whom we met in the community, introduced to us by the incredible Tim Lockie. She is a leadership coach for the Motivated Change Agent and founder of Atlas Leadership. And here's the thing. If you're not looking actually at the camera, like 98% of our listeners are listening on an audio device, Sonia has the biggest smile, and that joy and warmth radiates from the inside out. She is such a powerhouse of a coach. She is one of those fundraisers who has been in the work with us. She knows and understands what we're going through, and she has channeled all of these incredible ways for us to find joy in our work again. So let me give you a little bit of background on Sonia. She is a certified leadership and change management coach who just shows up to provide this critical insight and support to her clients. And she's really about empowerment, empowering people to navigate the change that is really happening in our world with more resiliency, clarity, and joy. And the first time I met her, John, like I found out she studied business and economics after reading about microfinance in a Time magazine article.
Obsessed with this
and
stat.
Just like pivoted her life and chased after that. that because she was so inspired about it. And she is really rooted in research-based practices and personal experiences and insights. And so she's got these incredible education models and methods, like maybe you've heard of them, the anatomy of transition, foster sustainable transformations within her clients and community. And she is a proud bicultural Chicana who loves being in nature, exploring the city with her two sons, her husband, David. And one of the things she said to me is, there is a different way to do this work. And we can create a way of being that acknowledges pain, but can root ourselves in joy. And so I love that she supports motivated change agents to just live a life with joy. And you're about to get that today. So Sonia, welcome inside our house. We're so happy you're here.
Thank you so much for the invite. It's such a joy to be with you guys today.
Well, we just adore you. I'm so excited for the community to soak up what you have given to us one-on-one. And before we dive into just your incredible expertise, you have an amazing story of how you got into this work in a sort of winding path. So tell us about little Sonia. Tell us about growing up and tell us about what lights you up.
Yeah. So, lifelong idealist. You know, as a kid, I was exposed to global missions. I was raised in an evangelical home, and I was always inspired and curious about like the missionary lifestyle. And as I like dove into that as a teenager and went on trips, exposed to global poverty and the injustices in the world, and just wanted to do something about it. And like so many of your listeners, that's just like, I got to do something, right? So that's my, you know, that's always been a part of my story. And like you said, I was pursued a career in microfinance and wanting to address global poverty through a sustainable approach, not just this handout approach. And so I started my career at a cool organization. I thought it was my dream job. And there was, in so many ways, like I say, I got my fundraising chops there, from Major Gift to, you know, that was at the time Kiva had just started. And so we were like, oh, I mean, we were a 30 year old organization. So, you know, we were trying to do some organizational culture shift change as the times were changing. And younger people like myself at that time was getting involved. And I was just working so hard. I believed in the mission so much and was working a ton of hours trying to create a new program, just striving so hard for the mission and feeling frustrated in areas where I didn't feel like I was creating the change that I wanted organizationally. And you know, there was also the recession at that time. So we went through like I went through three different experiences of big layoffs. And it was really hard, like this organization that I love, this work that I loved, but I was striving and there was a lot of just challenges internally too, you know, and frustration. And I was exposed to a master's program in learning and organizational change. Actually, one of my interns was a student there. And I was like, wait a second, there's like a study on how to do this better. And just managing the change and caring for the people in an organization when you're going through all of this change. So my path led me to this program at Northwestern. And there I was just like, wow, it was so amazing to see tools and approaches that really centered humans. And not just the work as like a mission, but really humans. Like, how do we learn? How do we grow as individuals? How do we create psychological safety in the workplace? And I was just like, this, I need to bring this back to all of the nonprofits. Like, we don't necessarily have all of the big budgets that like my colleagues at the program were from Google and AMS, and they were a part of their learning department, right? Like, or executive coaching
what
department.
A luxury.
Right. That's where I learned where executive coaching was. And I got coaching and I started to unpack some of the change that I had struggled through, you know, and just kind of like blubbered my way through. And it was just so empowering. Like, wow, if I can just shift the way that I'm thinking about this, asking the right questions to refocus, that it could have changed. Like, I didn't have to carry so much anxiety and stress. So that's what led me on the path of being a coach.
Okay. I mean, hearing your story, I already have enjoyed our time getting to spend together in the community, but just hearing your story puts together so many pieces for me of how you show up in the world. And that definitely comes through the way that you speak and care for people. And I think you putting a stake in the ground around holistic leadership coaching, like, where was this my whole life? You know, like I kind of like Becky and I joke about this a lot, but it's like we, you know, had the experience with a lot of consultants and a lot of professional development over our careers. And it's like, no one really ever put all those pieces together. And we're neglecting the fact that we're humans trying to do these things. You know, and we have a lot of other factors of life besides just being successful in one domain. And so I really love that you have centered that. And so I want to give you space to talk about what that looks like. And kind of talk about your approach with holistic leadership coaching.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. So I got my master's back in 2015, I think. And then I went on to have two young children. And I wasn't in an organization. I wasn't coaching full time. And I know for some people that are listening that maybe aren't in the place that they feel like are utilizing all of their skills, like, I just want to encourage them, because during that time, I knew that I wanted to be home with my children. I had this master's and was raising these babies and toddlers and spending my full time with them. And honestly, that was such a critical time for my journey to understand how the brain develops and emotions. And so it was interesting, you know, like as I learned to deal with my own triggers as a mom and deal with my own emotional stuff. And then even knowing how to communicate with a four-year-old that is busy in their brain playing and not listening to you when you need to get out the door. Right. So like learning more about emotional regulation and how the brain develops and attachment, like that stuff, all that time of actually even lowering the intensity within my nervous system, like spending time in the park, spending time not rushing from place to place, that actually really has informed my practice that we can produce better work when we're in that state of ease. So yeah, so the approach that I have is three levels. It's the mind, how are we thinking about things, and the stories that we tell ourselves, both about ourselves, about the work, like that impacts how we feel every day as we show up. If we feel like we are never doing enough, that has a feeling of weight and discouragement, right? And that emotion. So then the second level is looking at our emotions and having more emotional maturity and awareness about what are the different emotions that I'm carrying into my work, and be aware of it, and not to like hide it away or push it away, but to really just acknowledge like that it impacts how we do our work. When we're feeling fear that people aren't going to respond to us, that this campaign isn't going to hit the mark, that's the energy that we're putting into that work. And so understanding the kind of the power of emotions that, and then on the third level is the embodied experience, because our body, like we're humans and we live in this body that has chemical reactions, that has knowledge, stored knowledge. And so I might say like, okay, everything's fine, trying to rationally tell my brain that I'm safe. But if the last time I did a campaign like this, or the last time I did a gala, it didn't work out. I just had all of this intensity around it. We talk about a gala. Even now, it's funny, I'll go on LinkedIn and have conversations, and it's like my body remembers the intensity of the first time I threw one. I didn't know what I was doing. And even this morning, I was thinking like how I was just so exhausted. I didn't. And like I had so much wrapped up in that. I was like, oh, my body remembers that. Mm. So how can we lead differently if we're not addressing what our body is feeling? And so I integrate somatic work as well. Like what is my body? Where is my power? Like, in my body, how am I feeling in my body? And then also like, sometimes we're just tired or need to eat, you know? And that's what I learned even with toddlers too. It's like, you could be like, oh, your behavior is out of control. And it's like, oh, cause you're tired, right? But that's the truth for adults too.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm not showing up. I'm not leading the way that I want to. And it's like, oh, because I'm not taking care of my body.
Yeah.
So that's the three levels of my approach.
I feel every bit of that right now. And I'm going to like share something rawly, because I think when you talk about like the gala piece, all of a sudden, I mean, John, I know you as
I'm
well.
I'm like nodding.
I mean,
this.
There's like a physical, emotional, and mental piece that just triggers. Mm-hmm. And I, when I think about galas, and John and I did them for 10 years, you know, where it was like, it wasn't even just the event management. It was every piece of production. It was, you're trying to manage people and expectations in the room. At one point, I'm trying to be a major gift officer, and I'm trying to introduce, and I'm trying to cultivate, and I'm trying to move. And it's too much. John, do you remember the year I'd had a child like a month before? I was on maternity leave, and it wasn't even a question in anyone's mind, including my own, that I would be at that gala, and I would be running part of the production, and I am pumping in the back room midway through it because I'm breastfeeding, and I'm like charging through it. And it's like, I didn't even feel great. You know, I'm four weeks postpartum. And the fact that that is normalized is so weird. Can we talk about how weird that is? And so I just want to thank you for bringing these issues out of the back of the closet. Why do we put this in the rearview mirror? Because this informs the way we move through our work. And so I thank you for talking about self-care. And we deeply value it. And we love that this is a space where people can come and talk freely about it. But I also think it is such a left-handed move for nonprofit professionals to pour into self-care. And I want to get your opinion on that. Like, why is it so difficult for us to embrace this and to break through just these long-held beliefs that we've had about that we're not worthy of doing it, or we don't have enough time for it, or we're just not going to listen to our bodies? I'd love to get your opinion on that.
A big piece is, how are we thinking about self-care? You know, we all have a variety of different ideas of what that means, right? So if you feel like that's like a bubble bath, or, you know, just if you're framing it in your mind as selfish, like, our people are the least selfish people, right? They've given their career to creating change. And so if you have the notion of self-care, like, you might verbally say like, yeah, I believe in self-care. And then when we go deeper and say like, okay, why aren't we putting it on our calendar? It's like, well, I have these deeper beliefs around what self-care is, right? I have deeper beliefs around whether or not I'm worthy of it. You know, if your relationship with yourself is simply that I have to work, like my value is connected with what I produce, then you're always going to be producing, right? And so it's like taking a step back and being like, oh, like, I'm worthy, period. Right?
And I feel like we need to hear that. Yeah, I feel like you need to step us through that one more time. I mean, if you're finding your value in what you're producing, I mean, go back. This is so good.
Or if your KPI is dictating your worth, that is also extremely backwards.
And the thing is that like, our brain wants to keep us safe. And so if we have a story in our mind that in order to keep your job, in order to be seen as successful, in order to like maintain your relationships within your organization and be seen as valuable, if that's in there, then your brain is going to push you to keep working, right? If you don't have this safety to say like, it's okay to take a day off and like, my job isn't at jeopardy, my relationships aren't at jeopardy, and even the way that I think about myself isn't at jeopardy, then it's going to be harder to take that time. And so it requires a shift to say, oh no, I get to take care of myself. Like, I am my greatest asset. And when I take care of myself, that's when I can produce the better value for the organization.
Man, I mean, I love that this has been like recurring theme this season, because I feel like we, you know, we're intent to lift this kind of topic this year with prioritizing self-care and normalizing rest as part of our trends for the year. But man, the way you're unpacking this, Sonia, is just so powerful, because I think this gets into like the brass tacks of what's really blocking us. And I do think you're talking to a group of people exactly as you've defined, that have unique challenges, and just the type of leaders that are gathered in the social impact space that want to pour out, that want to do more, that care so dang much. So what are some of the unique challenges that leaders in the social sector face that are less dominant in other industries?
Well, I think a big piece is our connection with our work and the passion and the drive that we have that goes deeper than a job, right? And I think that's really beautiful and important, and that does drive us. And when we connect our identity so closely with the output of our organization, especially as founders, you have this idea, you want to create this change. And if you, the way that you see yourself is so deeply connected to the success of an organization, then any time that the organization is struggling or you need a pivot or you need to step back from it, it feels like you're stepping back from yourself. Right? When people leave the organization, when you have team members leave the organization, it feels like they're leaving you. And so it's that disconnection there of saying, like, I can have a passion and create something in the world, and I'm also okay as a whole person.
Taking a quick pause from today's episode to thank our sponsor, who also happens to be one of our favorite companies, Virtuous. You know we believe everyone matters, and we've witnessed the greatest philanthropic movements happen when you both see and activate donors at every level, and Virtuous is the platform to help you do just that. It's so much more than a nonprofit CRM. Virtuous helps charities reimagine generosity through responsive fundraising, volunteer management, and online giving. And we love it because this approach builds trust and loyalty through personalized engagement. Sounds like Virtuous might be a fit for your organization? Learn more today at virtuous.org or follow the link in our show notes.
I'll throw you back a very specific question, because I was talking to a friend in our community this past week, and he is really excited. He's about to have his first baby in the family, you know, and they are going to take... He has this amazing leave that is scheduled. It's going to be like 4 months. But as the sole fundraiser at his organization, he has his biggest goal ever. Mm-hmm. And he feels the weight of just, I can't step away because I've got this incredible goal. The team is counting on me, but he wants to be and should to be able to be present and to enjoy that. But I think there's struggle in the, how do you functionally do that? You know, and what are some of those conversations look like? So I'd love for you to kind of give some counsel.
Man, I feel that struggle. Yeah. Do you not, just as a human being and as someone being in development, that is a really tough place. Yeah, Sonia, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, there comes an element of, and this might be like for the larger industry, kind of creating a shift around how we approach our work in rather than kind of a hustle and have to energy. And like scarcity, that if I don't work, then things don't happen. Like that's a belief. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that's served many of us very well, right? Like that's gotten us the success that we have achieved, you know, pushing and working hard. But in the long run, if I don't do it, no one will, that might not actually be the best thing for our industry. That might not be the best thing
for us. And it may not even
be
true.
Yes. So like just opening up, like asking the question, like, is that true? Like, what if this person steps back and the team says, oh, no, fundraising is all of our goal, right? Like empowering all of the team members, all of the board members to say like, we love this passion and this mission that we get to step in for each other because we're human and humans take time to be with their babies and need time to go get married and, you know, like have a sabbatical. What if we change the way that we're thinking about how work got done?
Okay, that was such a brilliant answer. And of course, the answer is we lean onto community in those moments. Because I think part of the problem or issue I've always had with the sector is that we're just so siloed, not only just in our thinking, but in our processes. And we just assume that a frontline fundraiser, you know, is the one that should be out there doing, grabbing X, and donor relations should only stay in this lane. But if you really have a culture, a healthy, robust culture, back to your point about psychological safety, where people feel like they can take that time and they know that they have other people who are going to jump in unique and creative ways to fill in whatever gaps exist, that feels so good. And what a comfort to the entire team to know that when it's my turn, you know, whether it's a funeral or whether it's that sabbatical or whatever leave we need to take, that we've got a team that's got to have our backs that way. And so we're getting into the existential. And so I want to lift something up that's come into our community. And I want to hit it right between the eyes. And I'd love to get your thoughts about this. But, you know, ever since we've started talking about mental health, you know, quite a bit, centering our conversation in cultures and safety and self-care and well-being, you know, we get a lot of attention on that. I mean, Mental Health Week is our most downloaded week of the year. And so we hear that the community is hungry for this content, but we get some pushback. And I think it's fair, if I'm being honest, we get some pushback from the community that says, I want to do this. I believe in this, but I don't work in an organization that supports this ideal. I don't have a boss who models this for me or makes me feel like this is okay. What do I do? And so I would love to know like what your response would be back to someone who says that. And I have to tell you, we come up with as many hacks, tips, mindsets, strategies, but at the end of the day, like what could someone really do at Brass Tacks when that's their reality?
You know, that is a really great question, because that's the reality for so many of us. And I think that one of the things that I do with my clients is we take a step back to look at, you know, what do we have control over? And oftentimes, so much of our energy is spent on things that we don't actually have control over, and our worrying and our fears, right? And we don't have control over other people. We don't have control over the way that our boss shows up, but we do have control over our mind, the thoughts that we think, the emotions that we process, and even how we care for our bodies. And so when you are rooted in that knowledge and you're getting supported, you know, with someone outside of your organization that says like, yes, you bring value, you are valuable, and you're rooting yourself in some of those practices, then you can show up with the energy that you choose, right? They might be, you know, struggling or pushing things forward or whatever. But if I choose to center myself in the morning and say, these are my boundaries, and even better understanding that term, right? Like what are personal boundaries as far as professionally that I can do that I'm willing to push. When we have more autonomy and awareness of the emotions and the mindset that we're going into, then like the world may be, your organization might be really in a hot mess. But if you're taking the time to center yourself, then you can show up with that energy. And sometimes it's like, you know what? This isn't the place for me anymore.
Yeah.
But having someone outside of your organization to kind of talk through that, say like, here's what I'm seeing, here's how I'm feeling. Like, and some people, you know, it's not going to be the same for everybody based on their background and their experience. Some people might still be able to thrive in an organization and create awesome, you know, micro teams of health in their organization and care for them and show up with expanded capacity because their wellness is a priority on your little team. And then some people, like based on their experiences, like, I can't do this. And that's when, and like, and I'm believing that my desire to do good is going to be met out in the world with an organization that, and opportunities for me to work from a place of joy and like authenticity of who I am.
Oh, that's so good.
That's what I help my clients believe and step into.
It's so good. And I hope that helps people feel seen, because you said, I'm going to quote you back to you, because you said this to me once and it really stuck with me. And you said, emotions are energy. Mm-hmm. And how can you take your energy and not let it drain you? How can you take your energy and pour it into joy rather than having all of that energy go to fear and to worry? And we want to reject that burden, but we want to acknowledge that fear. And I thank you for saying that. And I also think that if you're someone who this is resonating with. I will also say getting community with like-minded friends. If you don't have a community, please come into our community. It's weareforgoodcommunity.com. It's free. We talk about wellness and self-care and we support each other. And there's no strings attached and there's no sales pitch because we just need a safe place to be. And I heard this before and I want to say it again because I so deeply believe in the value of coaching. And we had someone tell us once, you know, that a therapist is helping you look back and a mentor is helping you in the present, but a coach is helping you look forward. And they're helping you project and achieve those things that are on your heart that you want to achieve. And it's almost like having a friend running with you, championing you in your life. So I think this is so fantastic. And we want everybody to like experience the power of coaching. So talk to us today about some of your favorite coaching questions to help prompt maybe some self-reflection in our listeners and our leaders today. Can you give us a couple of those?
Yeah. One of the things that I love to ask as people are saying like, oh, like, you know, I'm frustrated with this or that, or I'm thinking about doing this project or that project. And I say like, what would that look like? And so tapping into our imagination to say, what would that look like? You know, what is, sometimes we have this like desire for change in our hearts, but we aren't necessarily speaking out what exactly that would look like. You know, what would that look like for your team to embrace mental wellness? And for us to really get to those specifics, because when we start to dream that out with color and clarity, that's when we can start moving in that direction. I think that, you know, I remember being at that organization and wanting things to be different. But I didn't know, someone asked me like, well, what would you want your boss to do? And I hadn't really gotten clear on what it was that I wanted different, right? So that's one of the things that I work with. It's just creating that space, right? Oftentimes we don't have that space to really say like, well, what would it look like? The other one that I love is, what if this isn't a problem? Because so often we are problem solvers. Our brain is always trying to solve problems and we get narrow when we think, you know, when you're like, okay, there's a problem and I kind of trigger my fear and anxiety, all of those neuro pathways in my mind that like, if I don't figure this out, then X, Y, and Z bad thing is going to happen, right? So when our brain goes down those pathways, we're not accessing all of our mental capacity. And so when we say, what if this isn't a problem, we open our mind and even like physiologically our eyesight narrows when we're in the fight and flight mentality. And so if we can say, oh, this isn't a problem, or what if it isn't a problem, that's when we can actually access different creative parts of our mind to look at it from a different angle, to actually tap into a higher level consciousness to approach the situation. And so, and then it just kind of gets fun to say like, oh, maybe it's not a problem.
Yeah. And I feel like the universe is pointing to this. I'm reading The Obstacle is the Way right now. And I feel like it is a lot of reframing of how we view things, you know, because not everything is problematic that it's a problem either. You know, some things is you're having that block because you need that block to get to the better space. And I do think a lot of it is your mindset. So just jiving with this. And I think so many in our sector need to pour into this. Like I think I'm putting myself in this too, that we need to reach out for help when we need it. And probably even before we feel like we need it too. And you're speaking to the power of what coaching can do and having somebody to take your hand through this journey. So I just have loved this conversation so much. And I know just from your intro story, you have been in this space. You are captivated by the work that we get to do. And I know you've been witness to a lot of philanthropy in your life. And I wonder if you'd take us back to a story that maybe has just stuck with you after your incredible journey.
You know, I have this story of earlier in my career, I was taking the bus to work. And I had a coworker that lent me her car to go run some errands because we were out in the suburbs and lent me her car. And a story of philanthropy in a different way, of generosity in a different way. So anyway, I'm driving this, her using her car to run some errands, and I'm in a parking garage. I scrape her car, and I just, I mean, I feel horrible. And I go back to her and I tell, you know, I'm like, I'm so sorry I scraped your car, and like kind of bracing for the worst. I just feel awful. And she's like, it's okay. We'll get it fixed. And I know you'll be able to pay for it. And that was a glass of cool water. The reality that she just it wasn't a problem. And I just remember that because it was just like this forgiveness and this grace with problems. You know, I was a young professional. I was so amped up with doing everything right. And when there was a mistake, and like, you know, I'm also a, you know, recovering perfectionist, for her to just say, it's okay. And we'll get it fixed. I think so often, you know, we make mistakes and our nervous system, depending on like our background, it just gets, you know, amped. We are dysregulated. Yeah. And so like her generosity of saying, it's okay, was like, wow. Like it just, I felt it in my bones, and it was refreshing to be like, oh, like that, I think that's leadership, to tell your team, like, rather than, you know, responding out of that fear of being like, okay, let's fix this, let's get after it, like, it's okay. And so that was just a moment of generosity, that we can have generosity of spirit too. And I think even as nonprofit professionals, you're not necessarily making huge, huge donations or able to do things, but like generosity of spirit should be elevated as well. And like that actually is what we can give to our donors, what we can give to our clients. Like that is just as valuable as the finances. And that's what makes our work so powerful.
Okay.
Of course, our dear friend took it to that level, right?
Overflowing. Ugh. What a beautiful story. There's something so powerful to me, John, when people who have been in missions and seen the most unbelievable changes occur in people and in life come in and talk about something that was so profoundly simple. And it just has me sitting here thinking, how many times have we just given the gift of saying it's okay to another person who is clearly in pre-fight or flight mode? And we can just tell them it's okay. And Sonia, I just really appreciate the way you show up and move through this life, because you were one of those people that said, you know, for so long, it's been about that fight for social justice, and that we have to pour all this energy into fighting. And you're the one that said, what if it was powered by joy rather than the fight? What if we were so filled with love that's what we put into the world? And so when we show up present and imperfect, this is how we change the industry, you know? And you're the one that said to me, you know, everybody pays for a strategic plan, but if you have a mental block or a mindset that won't allow you to move out and into your fullness and your greatness, then that's where the investment should be. And I am telling you, I am here for this revolution that I want to see happening for our sector with healthy missions, healthy people. So thank you for that incredible story. You know, we end all of our conversations with the one good thing. You've listened to podcasts plenty of times. So I can't wait to hear what little gift and nugget you're going to give to us and to the community. What's your one good thing, Sonia?
My one good thing is you, the person that is hearing this in your ears, you are the good thing. And that you don't have to do more. And it's from that place that you get energized. And I want to encourage you to do a joy date, which is, got this idea from The Artist Way. And she, the author of The Artist Way, says, go do a artist date. And I just want you to go do something that fills you with delight. Nothing to do with work. Maybe it's putting on rollerblades. Maybe it's going to an art shop. Maybe it is making a snow angel outside. But like, there is so much joy and delight in the world that like, put it on your calendar and go have a joy date, because that's what's going to fuel us to keep doing this really important work.
That's one for the books, probably the best one good thing we've ever had delivered in this house.
You are the one good thing. I already started crying when she said, you don't have to do more. That is a gift for somebody to tell you, you don't have to do more. Thank you, Sonia.
Yeah, I mean, you've got rabid fans in us, and I know the people listening are going to want more Sonia in their life. So would you point us to the ways you show up online and how people can find you and connect with your incredible coaching services too?
Yeah, people can find me at soniaperez.com. That's SONYAPEREZ.com. And there you can find the links to the socials, and you can also book a discovery call. I have openings for individual one-on-one clients. So snag that time. We'll chat through what you're facing and get you connected to some sustainable energy that is inside of you, and just honored to be a part of people's journey.
John, can we please go through the We Are For Good financials and see if we have capacity for me to get coached by Sonia? Because
let's
that would
do
be
it.
Amazing. And thank you for this. I love that we could have a mini coaching session for maybe those who don't have budget for it, who couldn't experience. Thank you for coming in. If you do have budget for it, yes, 100%. We want you to go see Sonia or someone like that, because we do want you to be a whole human as you walk through not only this work, but through this life. So thank you, my friend. Could not be rooting for you more, and just appreciate that good virtual warm mom hug that you brought in that we knew you would. Appreciate you.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Hey friends, thanks so much for being here. Did you know we create a landing page for each podcast episode with helpful links, freebies, and even shareable graphics? Be sure to check it out at the link in this episode's description. You probably hear it in our voices, but we love connecting you with the most innovative people to help you achieve more for your mission than ever before. We'd love for you to join our good community. It's free, and you can think of it as the after party to each podcast episode. You can sign up today at weareforgood.com/hello. One more thing. If you loved what you heard today, would you mind leaving us a podcast rating and review? It means the world to us, and your support helps more people find our community. Thanks, friends. I'm our producer, Julie Comfer, and our theme song is Sunray by Remy Borsboom.
Rabid fans have always powered the We Are For Good podcast, but now Rabid fans can get even more goodness and access by joining Good Friends. It's our listener support community for the We Are For Good podcast.
Good Friends comes with perks, exclusive episodes with John and I, including The Good Brief, our new monthly cliff notes of the greatest takeaways and lessons learned from that month, and exclusive AMA episodes where we answer your burning questions and tap our community of experts. Join now or learn more at weareforgood.com/friends.
We can't wait to see you inside. That's weareforgood.com/friends.